Hi, everybody. Welcome to Shift, a podcast about mobility. I'm Pete Bigelow, your host. We've talked a lot lately about electrification, electric vehicle charging, and other energy-related topics in the transportation world. But I would be remiss if we overlooked the fact that there's also a lot of developments in the autonomous vehicle realm as well. We have Waymo doubling its coverage area in Phoenix, Cruise popping up operations in Dallas and Houston, which follows an earlier expansion in Austin, and Zoox, the company building its own bi-directional robotaxi in-house, is blazing a new path in terms of figuring out how to meet existing federal safety standards and get its vehicles on the road. The latter is the subject of our episode today. My guest is Amanda Prescott, the Director of Homologation, Vehicle Systems, and Feature Integration at Zoox. She's going to give us an overview of the company's strategy and then a deep dive into how Zoox went about meeting regulatory requirements and self-certifying that its robotaxi meets those requirements rather than applying for an exemption request like others. That's an important topic and not without controversy. The National Highway Traffic Safety Administration has launched a query into Zoox's self-certification, and the whole industry is closely watching what happens here. Without giving any more away, I am pleased to bring you this conversation with Zoox Director Amanda Prescott. Amanda, welcome to the podcast. It's great to have you here today.
Thanks so much for having me on, Pete. I'm really excited to chat.
Kick this off. Tell us a little bit about what you do at Zoox.
Yeah, absolutely. I am the Director of Homologation, Vehicle Systems, and Feature Integration at Zoox. I came to Zoox in 2017, and the key parts of my role are making sure that our vehicle meets the federal motor vehicle safety standards, the state vehicle codes, and the EPA and fuel economy requirements. In addition, my team helps deliver a lot of the really exciting customer-facing features that people will see when we start our commercial service.
All right. I've got a lot of questions about that, and maybe I'll back into some of them. But first and foremost, Zoox reached a big milestone in February when it deployed its robotaxi on public roads in California. And this is essentially a moment that was 9 years in the making since the founding of the company. So I'm curious, what was that like for you to watch and participate in?
It was absolutely amazing. I wasn't able to join in real life, but I was able to watch it over Zoom with many of the other employees at Zoox. And it just felt absolutely amazing, exhilarating, but perfectly normal. It just came down the road towards one of our buildings and just looked absolutely perfect. And it was just really so satisfying for me personally and professionally to see this come to life.
For our listeners who don't know, like even in the world of autonomous vehicles, the Zoox vehicle is pretty unique. Give us a rundown on what makes it stand out.
Yeah, the Zoox vehicle is unique because it has four-wheel steering and it's bidirectional, are two of the really unusual features. Bidirectionality means that it can drive either direction just the same as it does the opposite direction. So there's no true front or rear of the vehicle. We also have four-wheel steering specifically for our urban mobility goals of being able to get into really tight parking spots to pick up and drop off our customers. And finally, the exterior shape is fairly unusual in the market these days. It's boxy and short so that we minimize our space on the road, but maximize the space inside for our vehicles.
Why was it important to design and develop a vehicle that had that bidirectionality? Like, what does that add for an autonomous vehicle in particular?
One of the great benefits of bidirectionality is fail operational. So let's say we have an issue with a drive motor or we lose a headlamp. We can flip and change direction so that we can get back to base or complete the mission, drop the rider off and go home. So, or if we lose a single camera, for example, that's forward facing, we can flip and make that on the rear of the vehicle where it's slightly less critical for our autonomy system.
I kind of love the idea of being out on a ride and the vehicle needing to stop and briefly change directions while it continues on its way. And I don't move my seat, but then I have a whole new vantage point.
Absolutely. And once you ride in the vehicle, it's absolutely seamless. You don't even think about it after the first 10 seconds. The first 10 seconds are like, oh, this is so exciting. I'm in an autonomous vehicle. And then you're like, oh, this is a vehicle that's driving me where I want to go. and I'm not thinking about how my driver is driving, unlike when I get in a rideshare car.
So thinking about that, I guess we're stating the obvious here, but the Zoox vehicle is for carrying people and not hauling goods in any way, which maybe some people would think, because it's owned by Amazon, would be one application or permutation of what you're doing.
Yes, we are absolutely focused on carrying people. That's our goal. That's what we set out to do in 2014, and we have not pivoted from that goal. And we think that we're going to carry people in the urban space better than anybody else. We're designed for carrying you from point A to point B in urban centers.
So Zoox is also really unique because you've designed your own vehicle, as we've kind of covered. You're developing your own autonomous software stack, and you plan on developing your own ride-hailing network. Each one of those three things seems like a tall task on its own. Like, why did it make sense to do all this in-house?
Because we have ultimate control over the service that you as a consumer is going to see. We've designed the vehicle for its purpose. We've designed the autonomy software to deliver outstanding performance. And then we have the ride-hail network to go along with it. So you're going to have the same experience every single time you ride a Zoox. There's not going to be any variation in what you experience as a consumer. And we think that that is really a key advantage for Zoox.
So Amanda, we noted earlier, you've made this milestone in deploying on public roads back in February, I think it was. What's the status of that? Those on-road operations or deployments, and where are they taking place? Who's riding in the Zoox vehicle right now?
Yes, we got our California DMV permit back in the beginning of February, and that permit allows us to operate within our operational design domain in Foster City. And right now we are operating on approximately 1 mile loop between two of our office buildings. And we are only carrying employees of the company in accordance with our permit.
Gotcha. What does it take to get the California Department of Motor Vehicles permits? And can you describe the regulatory process a little bit? Give us an overview of what it takes to get to this point that you're at right now.
Yeah, it's a fairly lengthy process with a lot of requirements that we must attest to, things regarding what our operational design domain is, or ODD, whether or not we have insurance, what kind of validation we've done to make sure that our autonomy system is up to the task. We have to certify that our vehicle meets the federal motor vehicle safety standards as well. And then finally, we have to meet the California Vehicle Code requirements. And those are just some of the examples of things we need to provide, in addition to making sure we've done outreach with the local communities and municipalities, and we've put together law enforcement interaction plans.
Okay. I want to ask you a lot about the federal part of this process, but I'm going to stick to California for the time being. So you mentioned you need the California DMV permit, and then to carry paying passengers, what do you need beyond that? And how many layers are there just in California as you kind of look at the hoops, I guess, you need to jump through to eventually start carrying paying passengers on public roads in California?
Yeah, so right now we have our California DMV testing permit for our vehicle. We will need to obtain permits from the California Public Utilities Commission to be able to start carrying anyone other than Zoox employees, even if we're not charging them a fare, even if it's just you, Pete, want to come for a ride in our vehicle? We can't give you that until we get our California Public Utilities Commission permit. We also will need to get our California DMV deployment permit. So that's the next level past the testing permit.
Okay. And we mentioned the federal side a little bit, and you said to get the California DMV permit that you now have, you need to meet federal motor vehicle safety standards or get an exemption from them. So how has Zoox handled that aspect of getting the California DMV permit so far?
Yeah, we certified our first robotaxi June 30th of 2022, and that was one of the key steps to start the process of getting our DMV permit. And in self-certifying the vehicle, we met that criteria in the DMV permit. We're the first ground-up robotaxi that's been designed to carry passengers that has achieved this milestone of self-certification.
So I'm curious, Zoox elected to self-certify versus going the exemption route. So why that path and not the other?
Yeah, from the very beginning, Zoox set out to design and manufacture our robotaxi to comply with the applicable federal motor vehicle safety standards. This is the established process in the U.S., and it's common to every single vehicle that you see out on public roads today. I can't speak necessarily to why others have chosen a different path to pursue exemptions, but that is the process that you follow if you feel that your vehicle is not going to be able to meet the applicable federal motor vehicle safety standards.
So I feel like I'm going to date myself with this reference a little bit, but I'm thinking of the lyric from the Who song, Baba O'Reilly, meet the new boss, same as the old boss. And you're essentially saying it doesn't matter that it's a self-driving vehicle. It's the same process.
It is. It is. We go through the same process as anybody else. We evaluate the various federal motor vehicle safety standards. I believe there's more than 70 of them. They cover everything from motorcycle helmets to trucks. You determine which ones apply to your vehicle, and then you have to set about doing the testing and validation for you to feel comfortable that you comply with those safety standards.
So, Amanda, obviously a lot of people are very interested in this aspect of what Zoox is doing. You mentioned you're the first company to self-certify. Obviously, NHTSA is asking questions about that self-certification, and other companies are watching what happens here closely. So why is it that Zoox thinks its vehicle conforms with the motor vehicle safety standards and is copacetic to go this self-certification route?
Yeah. As I stated, we went through the process of evaluating all of the relevant safety standards, and we designed our vehicle to comply with those requirements. And then we developed the test results and the test procedures to demonstrate that we meet those requirements. And that's how we've determined that we think it's copacetic to go this route.
Get into those details a little bit. How do you go about designing? Are there test standards that you have to meet? Or do you have to design your own tests to do this in this kind of new world order?
So overall, we followed the NHTSA procedures for nearly every single federal motor vehicle safety standard that exists. For example, crash testing. We just followed the NHTSA procedure. Nothing special was required to do the crash testing. In the case of something like electronic stability control testing, or FMVSS 126, that standard, while not requiring a steering wheel, relies on a steering wheel, and they actually use a steering robot to input the steering angles to the steering wheel to do the testing to make sure that your stability control system meets the requirements. In our case, we didn't have to employ a steering robot to attach to our steering wheel to do the testing. We were just able to input that information directly into our vehicle so that it could execute the maneuver and demonstrate that we're meeting the requirements in that particular standard. So in some ways, you might think we actually simplified the process for determining that our vehicle meets the stability control requirements.
How about in terms of, so the vehicle has like a unique carriage style seating arrangement, and we hear a lot about how autonomy is going to enable people to work in, to, you know, use the interior of their vehicle as an office or as a, you know, third living room or third living space, essentially. When you have a unique seating arrangement, how do you think about meeting seatbelt requirements or airbag requirements? And there's probably a dozen things beyond that that kind of go into enabling a new seating arrangement.
So it's actually not complicated at all. So the requirements are well spelled out. They generally apply to the front row seats. And we follow the same procedures to meet that, whether it's designing the airbags or designing the seatbelts. The methods for doing that are well established, and the locations where you have to have that safety equipment is well established. And one of the exciting things, because of our bidirectionality, is that we've actually provided for the same level of safety protection in every single seating position, the same airbags, the same seatbelts, all of that. So regardless of which seat you pick, you get the same level of protection.
Would it be fair to think about this then as you're providing a higher level of protection because the way the current standards are spelled out for a conventional human-driven vehicle, it would be that the front seats get higher priority. And if you're in the back seat, theoretically, you have less protection. So what you're saying is you're ascribing to the highest possible level of occupant protection?
Safety is foundational here at Zoox, and we're really excited that we were able to apply essentially the front row requirements to all seating positions in the vehicle and provide that equivalent level of safety. I'm not going to say whether or not the backseat of another vehicle is more or less safe than their front seat. That's for each manufacturer to determine how they have crafted their vehicle designs. But for us, we feel we've set the bar by providing that same front seat level of protection to our rear seat occupants.
How do you go about the airbag aspect of this? Because I know Zoox has designed its own unique horseshoe-shaped airbags, if that's the way to think about that. Just from a design perspective, like how early in the design of the vehicle do you get to the point where you say, oh, this is what we need and it doesn't exist and we need to go design this from scratch? It's not just a vehicle, it's a component like that too.
Yeah. Very early on, right? The goal was set that we wanted to provide the same level of safety for every seating position. We also knew it was going to be carriage seating. We weren't going to have instrument panels or steering wheels or any of the usual places to deploy airbags out. So right from the get-go, it was recognized that we were going to have to develop a new airbag shape or design, if you will, to accommodate our goals of providing carriage seating for that communal feel, but then being able to provide that protection at every seating position. So by the time I arrived on the scene at Zoox in 2017, the team had already been working on this design.
So Amanda, if I have this right, the airbag, and does it kind of replace, it's both a, if I have the technical terms right, it's both a side airbag and a side curtain airbag, all in one that protects all seating positions?
Yeah, so our horseshoe airbag is most like a side curtain airbag in a conventional vehicle. Side curtain airbags cover from your A pillar to your C pillar, and they deploy between the occupant and essentially the windows, if you will. Think of in our vehicle, it wraps around that one row of seating. So it's a curtain in that it's sort of a vertical style airbag, and it goes along the window, across the middle, and down the other window. So each row of seats has one horseshoe airbag, and then it provides both side impact protection, ejection protection in case of a rollover, and then it gives that reaction surface for the frontal airbags that are more akin to your passenger airbag in a conventional vehicle. And it also sort of compartmentalizes the two rows, if you will, so that we help minimize the risk of the occupants in the two rows interacting with each other if there were a crash.
When Zoox is developing something like this, do you wind up working with law enforcement or first responders to figure out what's the easiest way for them to interact with a totally new vehicle? And you know, how does this work for first responders?
Yeah, so generally, or not specific to the airbag, we have continued to engage with our local law enforcement in Foster City, as well as California Highway Patrol. And then we've started engagement in Nevada as well, and other places where we hope to have our vehicle at some point, to bring in their feedback, share with them what we're doing, and really start to educate them about the vehicle so they can feel comfortable and confident should we be in a crash and they have to respond. So that we're constantly in that engagement, feeding back information both ways and educating them. One of the things that they actually really liked was the fact that we have such large doors on the side. Like, oh, this is great. If we need to go get into the vehicle to get somebody out, this isn't going to be hard at all. We're not going to have to roll back a dash or move steering wheels out of the way or cut doors off. You have this nice big opening, and it'll make it really easy for us to help your customers inside the vehicle.
What are some of the other ways that you have... Yeah, I guess that's not meeting a particular crash test standard, but what are some of the other ways that you have designed the vehicle to meet or exceed crash test standards that are part of those Federal Motor Vehicle Safety standards?
Yeah, as it relates to the crash test standards, we've met all of the requirements as specified. And in addition to that, we've helped develop a suite of features related to sort of post-crash functionality and handling a customer, right? So this includes making sure that our operations team would be notified if there's a crash so that they can dial into the vehicle and use our two-way communication system to check on our customers, make sure that they're doing okay, call for help if we need to call for help for them. We've also designed a couple different ways to open the doors in the rare case that we would lose power. We have a manual override as well available for that. We also activate the exterior lights, turn on the hazards, those types of things to help make sure that people understand that there is a hazard, and really trying to make it very seamless for people to be able to exit the vehicle following a crash, and that we're keeping everyone safe as well that it has to respond.
If I'm a rider in a crash in that sort of scenario, can I open the doors afterward, or can every Zoox remote operator press a button from afar and open the doors? How exactly does that work?
Both of those options exist. And then there's a third option that from the exterior of the vehicle, a first on scene person, even if they're not a first responder, can press a button on the exterior of the door to open the doors. And then finally, the manual release that we have is also available for first responders. You as a passenger could use it, but we've built the system so that in crashes up to the Federal Motor Vehicle Safety Standard level of severity, our 12-volt system remains intact and functional. So you can push the screen next to your seat the same as you would when you get to a drop-off location to open the doors, and the doors will power open.
I'm going to get really in the weeds here. Is it FMVSS 305 that deals with the electric powertrain crash test standards? And, how unique was that to have to account for in designing a vehicle, and how does Zoox meet those standards?
Yeah, FMVSS 305 applies to all vehicles that have high voltage powertrain systems. And we designed our high voltage system similar to any other EV that you see on the road. One of the features that we use that's common across the industry is a pyrotechnic disconnect. So the same point that the airbags are triggered, we trigger a disconnect that separates our high voltage system, if you will, to isolate it to eliminate risk of shock.
Amanda, if I remember this correctly, you have a pretty unique viewpoint on some of those standards, because you worked for the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration 15, 20 years ago or so when those standards were developed. If I have that right, what did you know about high voltage crash test standards way back in the early aughts?
Yeah, I was at the agency when 305 was coming out. It was at the infancy of electric vehicles. One of my coworkers was responsible for it. But the basis is that they're using the same crash test modes that are used for vehicles that are powered by things like gasoline, and want to make sure that just like in gasoline powered cars, where you want to not leak fuel because you want to minimize the risk of fire, in the case of electric vehicles, making sure that you don't leak any electrolyte and that you isolate it so that there's not the risk of a high voltage shock.
It's interesting. You hear a lot about EV fires nowadays, and often hear a lot about, what's the danger with hydrogen fuel cells? Because hydrogen is obviously very flammable. From your vantage point, is any energy you use inherently going to pose some sort of fire risk? And is that overblown compared to, obviously, there's 100,000 something fires in gasoline-powered cars as part of our status quo every day in the United States?
Everything has risks, Pete, right? And our job is to minimize those risks. And NHTSA's job is to help minimize those risks and set that bar for how we minimize that risk. The way I think about it is, if someone decided today to put gasoline in an automobile, there would probably be a lot of concerns. To date, yes, there's been some battery electric fires, but I'm really confident in the system we've designed and built, and that it's going to perform as expected out in the real world.
How did you get started on this path? Obviously, we've talked about your work at NHTSA. What was the interest in the auto industry, if that's kind of the right frame for thinking about how you started down this career path, Amanda?
Sure. I actually have a degree in civil engineering. I went to Duke University and got a degree in civil engineering, set about thinking I was going to build buildings and roadways and bridges and all of that kind of infrastructure, if you will. And as I, you know, got close to graduating, there were on-site interviews with a whole variety of companies and whatnot, and Ford Motor Company came on site. I grew up in Louisville, Kentucky, where Ford had two factories. I lived just down the road from their Kentucky truck plant. So I was quite well acquainted with them and thought, hey, why not? I'll go take a shot and see if I can get a job there. That could be fun. I really liked cars sort of generally. And I managed to get hired, which was super exciting. And then with my experience in sort of civil engineering and the structure side of it, I was assigned into their vehicle crash safety team right out of college. So that was my first exposure to crash testing and whatnot. And that was obviously a super exciting area to be involved in. And that's when I got my first exposure to the Federal Motor Vehicle Safety Standards.
I have an infrastructure question for you then as it relates to AVs. I feel like since the early days of the current industry, let's say like DARPA or shortly thereafter, like there's been a belief, I think, that all the processing and decision making had to happen on board the vehicle and there could be no reliance on the infrastructure. I'm curious if you think that's changed at all in recent years. And then part B would be like, does Zoox need anything from the infrastructure to operate or to enhance operations?
Zoox does not rely on the infrastructure for our vehicle to operate. I think there's a noble goal that, yes, you could use infrastructure. But if you travel at all around the U.S., you see the wide variety of infrastructure that's available. And so standardizing that across the vast universe of the U.S. roadways is an increasingly intensive process, right? To get V2I working, which is what a lot of people have been focused on. I think there's definitely benefits to it and it could be well done, but I'm not sure that it's a priority within the various priorities of the administrations that would help drive such adoption. So therefore, AVs, particularly our AV, we don't rely on V2I at all to be able to drive because there's just too much variation.
Gotcha. Amanda, I know we've been talking about, you know, how this works for riders post-crash, but more generally, what is the user experience that in normal operations that don't include a crash, you know, how is a rider going to feel different in this vehicle or how will they interact with it and kind of innovative ways?
Yeah. So in normal scenarios, non-crash scenarios, you'll have an app on your phone. And with that app, you'll hail a ride just like you do today for other services. And then upon arrival, the vehicle will help direct you to the vehicle. And then we have a variety of methods where it will authenticate that you are the person that hailed the ride before we open the doors for you so that we don't accidentally pick up the wrong person or someone jumps in front of you and steals your ride, so to speak. And then upon entering the vehicle, we do a lot with our interior experience in terms of the sounds that we play and how we adjust the lights to make it a very welcoming and enjoyable, and I would call it soothing experience upon entering the vehicle. You can then select your seat, sit down. We'll tell you to please fasten your seatbelts because safety is foundational in Zoox. We don't want anybody riding around without their seatbelt on. And then once you do that, you can just swipe the screen, the doors will close, and you will be on your way. And you can control the HVAC system if you'd like. We have it set to a nice nominal temperature, but if you want more or less, you can adjust that through the screens to the seat. You can also bring your music into the vehicle and listen to the music through our sound system. And the idea is that it's your time to relax and enjoy, take a nap, you can text, you can do whatever you want. But it's really about not having to drive and allowing you to just enjoy the ride. We also have phone charger, a wireless charger in the vehicle so that if you're running low on juice, you can juice up a little bit while you are on your way to your next destination. And upon arriving at the destination, we do the same kind of thing. We notify that you're coming to the end of your ride. We bring up the lights. We bring on a nice exit sound, reminding you to gather your things and then open the doors and you can exit and you don't have to close our doors. We do that for you. So you can just get out and be on your way, no looking back.
The lighting aspect of that almost reminds me of like a red eye flight where like the lights are off and it's soothing. And until it's like a half hour before we touch down, then all of a sudden the lights start coming back on and I have to start waking up and getting ready to egress the vehicle, so to speak.
Yeah, and I would say we've very much thought about our experience as wanting to be sort of a business class type of airline experience. So calm, soothing, and then you can decide if you want to amp up your songs of choice or if you want to use the task lights to read a book or do whatever it is that you want to do. But otherwise, we want it to just be very, very calming.
I'm curious. So we've been talking about this in the context of ride hailing. Will there be ride sharing where I will hail my ride and then someone else who might be going in a similar direction hails one and I share a carriage style seating arrangement with a stranger?
We've not decided our precise business model at this point in terms of solo rides versus pooled rides. The nice thing about the vehicle is if there are multiple people, because of the width of the aisle between the carriage seats and the size of our door, you don't have to get up if somebody else gets in or needs to get out at a stop. You can stay seated. You don't have to slide over, unlike the back of a conventional vehicle where somebody may need to get on that curbside or they're now on the driver's side, need to get out, and you're getting in and out of the vehicle.
I'm curious, after your time at Ford, so you've spent time at a traditional automaker and now at a startup squarely focused on autonomous vehicles. How might the approach to launching a vehicle differ at a traditional automaker versus a startup, or is it not really as different as I might think?
I think what's different for Zoox is that we're not selling our vehicle. It's not our goal to sell our vehicle. That's not how we anticipate making money. At a traditional automaker, selling a car is how you make money. And so there's, I think, a different emphasis between a traditional automaker that's selling cars and a company like Zoox that's doing everything in-house. Our goal is to deliver an amazing service every time you ride our vehicle. And so we are gearing ourselves towards that endpoint as opposed to shipping something to a dealer and having it sold.
Final question for you, Amanda. In terms of getting customers aboard the Zoox vehicle, can you give us a preview a bit of when we'll see Zoox expand its public road presence and kind of get customers aboard? And maybe more generally, what's in store for the rest of 2023 here from Zoox?
I can't give away our secrets about when we're going to be available for you to hail a ride, Pete. But the rest of 2023 is really focused on continuing to test on public roads, continuing to offer a service to our employees so that we can continue to evaluate and improve and expand what we're doing. And I think it's going to be really exciting as we work towards 2024 as well.
Great. Well, we will check back then, Amanda. But for now, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast. Really appreciate the time.
Thanks so much, Pete. It was wonderful being here.
That is it for today's episode. Suffice to say, if NHTSA allows Zoox's self-certification to stand as is, it's a watershed moment for the autonomous vehicle industry, because others, like Cruise for one possible example, might follow suit in choosing to self-certify. In short, this could open the door to lots of new autonomous vehicles on public roads. If you enjoyed today's episode with Amanda, the 200th episode of the Shift Podcast, incidentally, please leave us a review and or subscribe at Apple, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. That is it for today. Thank you to Amanda for joining us. Thank you for listening. We'll be back next week.